I want you to imagine a scenario for a second. You are running the operations for like a really massive manufacturing business,
Okay.
and you are about to sign off on this huge, high-stakes equipment purchase. You've looked at all the proposals, and you find the machine with the absolute lowest initial price tag.
Right, the cheapest option.
Exactly. So you authorize the purchase order, and in that moment, I mean, it feels like a massive win for your quarterly budget, right?
Absolutely. On
Yeah.
paper, it looks great.
Right. But then jump forward maybe 6 months, and the reality of that decision totally sets in, because that initial sticker price, it was basically a mirage.
Yeah, that happens all the time.
You're suddenly hemorrhaging capital on emergency maintenance, ruined raw materials, stalled assembly lines. So that quote-unquote cheap option has effectively become the most expensive logistical nightmare on your factory floor.
It is a totally systemic trap in industrial procurement. I mean, decision makers so often just tunnel vision on that initial capital expenditure, the CapEx, and they completely fail to account for the operational reality of actually running that equipment at scale. You see it across every manufacturing sector, really.
For sure.
But it becomes just glaringly obvious when you are dealing with high-value materials and super strict precision requirements.
And that is the exact mission of our deep dive today. We are going to break down how seasoned professionals navigate these massive industrial
Yeah,
investments.
so important.
The goal here is to isolate the hidden variables of pricing. We want to reverse engineer how to calculate true long-term value instead of just, hunting for the lowest bid.
Exactly.
So our source material today is this remarkably comprehensive technical guide. It's from Paya Press, published on May 2nd, 2026. And it's titled Busbar Bending Machine Pricing and Investment.
That's a great piece of literature.
It really is.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, this guide specifically targets electrical manufacturing, but honestly, the financial and logistical frameworks it lays out, they're basically a masterclass in capital allocation for
Oh,
anything.
100%. The
Right.
principles apply everywhere.
But to just ground this conversation before we get too deep into the economics, we should probably establish the hardware we're talking about. I'm not a factory floor manager, so what exactly is a busbar bending machine, and why are the stakes so high here?
Sure. So, in electrical engineering, a bus bar is basically this solid strip or bar of highly conductive metal. It's almost always copper or aluminum.
Okay.
And they're the backbone of high-capacity electrical panels, switchgear, massive power distribution grids.
So not just regular wiring.
Exactly. Unlike typical wiring, these are thick bars that manage immense amounts of electrical current. But the thing is, they don't arrive pre-configured for these complex custom panel layouts.
Right, they're just raw bars.
Yeah, they have to be systematically cut, punched for bolt connections, and bent at extremely exact angles to fit inside the switchgear housing. So a busbar bending machine is the specialized heavy-duty press used to process that raw metal.
Got it.
And the central argument of this Paya Press guide is that when you are processing materials that are as expensive and unforgiving as solid copper,
Which is not cheap.
not at all. The value of the machinery has to be measured by its efficiency and accuracy over its entire life cycle, not just, the number of the initial invoice.
Because if a machine bends a really heavy copper bar, even, like a fraction of a degree out of tolerance, you haven't just wasted time. You've scrapped a highly expensive piece of metal.
Precisely. You're literally throwing money in the scrap bin.
So if precision is the baseline here, how does a buyer actually evaluate the market? Because the guide segments the available machinery into three distinct tiers of industrial power. Okay, let's unpack this. What's the foundation?
Well, the foundation of the market is tier one, and this encompasses your manual and portable hydraulic tools.
Okay, so smaller stuff.
Yeah, these are highly specific, localized solutions. They're relatively low cost, compact, and they're engineered primarily for light duty stuff. Think on-site electrical panel work or facility repairs.
Right.
If an installation team needs to make a minor single bend adjustment while literally standing inside a server room, a tier one tool is the logical choice.
That makes perfect sense. So then we
Fabulous.
step up into tier two, which are the mid-range hydraulic workshop machines, and the guide calls these the three-in-one powerhouses, right?
Right, because they consolidate three distinct processes: bending, punching, and cutting, all into a single workstation.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and they're clearly designed for steady, moderate production volumes.
Yeah.
This is where you have a skilled operator who is physically feeding the material and manually managing the workflow.
Okay, and then at the very top, the apex of the market, we have tier three, the CNC processing machines.
Yes, the heavy hitters.
So CNC, that's computer numerical control, right? It basically shifts the burden of accuracy from the human operator over to the software.
Exactly. These machines feature really complex servo controls, multi-axis automation, full digital integration. They're engineered to execute rapid job changes, hold basically microscopic tolerances, and run high-volume production continuously.
You know, looking at these three tiers, it totally reminds me of scaling enterprise IT infrastructure.
Oh, that's an interesting way to look at it.
Right. Like, tier one is basically buying a rugged local hard drive. It's perfect for moving files around on the go, but you would never run a whole company off of it.
Right. It's just for quick tasks.
And then tier two is like your on-premise rack server. It manages steady, predictable daily traffic for like a single office.
Yep.
But tier three, the CNC machine, that is essentially licensing a fully automated cloud data center. I mean, it requires a massive upfront investment, but it handles infinite volume and routes complex traffic with zero human intervention.
What's fascinating here is that your infrastructure analogy holds up perfectly, especially when you start considering scalability.
Really?
Yeah, because the fatal error in capital procurement isn't inherently just buying a low-quality machine. It's misaligning the tier with your actual operational workload.
Oh, okay.
Sourcing a Tier 3 CNC machine for an operation that only processes, say, two custom bus bars a week. That is a catastrophic overallocation of capital.
Because you're paying for all this fancy automation that you're literally never going to utilize.
Exactly. You're burning money.
But the inverse has to be just as destructive, right? Like, if you are a massive high-capacity switchgear manufacturer and you try to force high-volume output through a manual Tier 2 machine, I mean, the labor bottleneck alone would just destroy your profit margin.
Oh, absolutely. You will bleed capital on operator hours.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the rework due to human error. The equipment tier has to be a strict one-to-one match with the production demand.
Okay, so once a buyer actually identifies the correct tier for their needs, they still have to navigate these huge price disparities within that category.
Yeah, that's where it gets tricky.
And here's where it gets really interesting, because the guide moves from those broad categories into the granular, specific mechanics that manipulate the final price tag.
Right under the hood.
Exactly, because two machines can look structurally identical sitting on a factory floor, yet their costs are vastly different. So what is actually driving that delta under the hood?
Well, the foundational cost driver is capacity. That basically dictates the sheer physical architecture of the machine.
Like the size and weight.
Yeah, you have to evaluate the maximum width and thickness of the material it's rated to process.
Mm-hmm.
Alongside the raw tonnage, basically the hydraulic force it can generate.
Okay.
A press designed to manipulate a 1-inch thick industrial aluminum bar. That requires a significantly heavier, more rigid frame. Massive hydraulic cylinders, a much larger motor than a machine rated for just standard copper strips.
That makes sense.
Because if the frame lacks that structural rigidity, the immense pressure of the bend will eventually just warp the machine itself.
Wow. Okay, so the frame matters. But the guide also emphasizes tooling and dies as a major cost variable. Specifically, things like quick change sets and specialized molds for complex geometries. You know, L, Z, U shapes, or edge bends.
Right.
But wait, let me push back on this for a second. Isn't bending just bending? I mean, if I am setting up a production line just to bend copper, why on earth am I paying a huge premium for advanced servo encoders and digital measurement?
That's a fair question.
Like, mechanical hard stops and standard hydraulic pressure have bent metal successfully for a century. Why do we need to digitize what is essentially a brute force physical process?
Okay, so here's the thing. Copper and aluminum alloys are not static materials.
Yeah.
They possess varying degrees of metallurgical memory. In the industry, we commonly refer to this as springback.
Springback, okay.
Yeah. When you drive a hydraulic punch into a thick copper bar to achieve, say, a 90-degree angle, the metal naturally wants to resist. It pulls back slightly once that pressure is released.
Oh, interesting.
Now, if your machine relies solely on static mechanical stops, it's essentially just guessing. You might target 90 degrees and actually end up with 89.5 degrees.
And over the span of a massive multi-tiered electrical panel, I imagine that half degree of error really stacks up.
Oh, it does.
Suddenly, the bolt holes on the bus bar just don't align with the breaker terminals on the assembly line.
Precisely. And that tolerance stack up is exactly what shuts down production entirely. The Pay Press Guide highlights that premium machines utilize encoder-based angle controls and digital rulers to dynamically adjust for that material spring back in real time.
So it's actively measuring during the bend.
Yes. We are talking about holding tolerances to within plus or minus 0.5 degrees.
That's incredibly precise.
It is. And furthermore, premium, highly polished tooling prevents surface galling or scratching during the bend.
Which matters because...
Well, in high-voltage distribution, a scratch on a bus bar isn't merely some cosmetic defect. It can actually alter the current distribution and create super dangerous thermal hotspots, or even arcing.
Oh, wow. Okay, that reframes the tooling cost entirely.
Yeah.
It is a fundamental safety and quality control mechanism. It's not just some luxury feature for the brochure.
Exactly.
And regarding those quick-change die sets in a really high-mix production environment, an operator might need to transition from fabricating Z-bends to standard U-bends multiple times a shift, right?
Almost constantly, yeah.
Yeah, so if they have to manually unbolt, align, and recalibrate traditional dies every single time, that is, what, 30 minutes of pure downtime per changeover?
Easily.
But a quick change system compresses that into basically a 2-minute swap. So you aren't really buying a piece of metal at all. You are buying back 28 minutes of production capacity.
Which is exactly how you have to evaluate the internal components. It's an efficiency multiplier. But the guide also outlines cost drivers that exist entirely outside of the machine's physical hardware.
Like what?
Build quality and safety integrations are massive pricing variables. A machine equipped with advanced light curtains, which, by the way, instantly sever power if an operator's hand breaches the safety zone.
Crucial feature.
Oh, yeah. That, alongside secure safety interlocks, carries a much higher baseline cost. Additionally, there's the burden of compliance.
Right, the paperwork.
Exactly. If your facility or your end client mandates strict CE, ISO, or UL certifications, the rigorous testing and documentation required to secure those ratings are heavily factored into that purchase price.
Okay, and then we hit the commercial logistics, which honestly is arguably where the most dangerous hidden costs actually lie.
Oh, without a doubt.
The guide explicitly breaks down Incoterms. These are the international commercial shipping terms, right? Like EXW, FOB, CIF. Reading this, it seems like comparing a machine quote without verifying the Incoterm is basically financial malpractice.
It absolutely is. Incoterms define the exact point where financial liability and risk transfer from the manufacturer to the buyer.
Okay, give me an example.
Take EXW or Ex-Works. If you sign an EXW contract, the manufacturer's responsibility basically ends the exact moment they place the machine on their own loading dock.
Wait, seriously?
Yes. You, the buyer, are now entirely responsible for hiring a freight forwarder, securing export customs clearance, paying for marine insurance, and handling the final mile delivery.
So a procurement manager might look at, say, a $40,000 EXW quote and a $50,000 CIF quote, which is cost, insurance, and freight. And they might blindly choose the EXW option just to save 10 grand on paper, completely unaware they just absorbed all of the logistical liability.
Yeah.
So if a crane drops that machine at a port in Shanghai, it is entirely the buyer's problem.
And that happens way more often than most companies care to admit. When you actually factor in the tariffs, the insurance premiums, and the specialized heavy freight transport, that quote-unquote cheap EXW machine can easily eclipse the cost of the CIF quote.
Because the CIF quote would have guaranteed fully insured delivery straight to your factory floor.
Exactly.
So what does this all mean? If a single degree of error ruins a $500 copper bar and a misunderstood shipping term adds 20% to your bottom line, the immediate question becomes, how do you financially rationalize buying the premium option?
Right.
How does an operations director look at a balance sheet and justify spending triple the capital on a Tier 3 CNC machine with servo encoders and full CIF shipping? I mean, I like to think of it like an iceberg.
Okay, how so?
The sticker price is just the tip of the iceberg visible above the water. It's what you see. But the massive ship-sinking block of costs hidden below the surface. That's everything else we just talked about.
That is a perfect analogy.
Yeah.
And you justify that premium purchase by basically abandoning the initial purchase price as your primary metric for success.
Yeah.
Industrial manufacturing relies incredibly heavily on the concept of total cost of ownership, or TCO.
Mm-hmm.
The PayaPress guide makes it unequivocally clear that the CapEx is just the entry fee.
Just the tip of the iceberg.
Right. To calculate true TCO, you must aggregate the machine's energy consumption, the predictable wear and tear on tooling, the required preventive maintenance schedule, operator training costs.
All the operational stuff.
Exactly. And the ultimate profit killer. Unplanned downtime.
It's totally the commercial printer model applied to heavy industry. Like, the cost of the printer hardware is artificially low. That's your CapEx.
Well,
but the true total cost of ownership is the proprietary ink, the specialized paper, and the IT contractor you have to dispatch every single time the machine jams. over a five-year life cycle, that sheet printer ends up costing the company triple what a premium model would have.
That is an excellent framework for it. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the industrial sector actually quantifies this using a really rigid mathematical formula.
Oh, really? There's a formula?
Yeah, the guide details the specific payback calculation. Basically, your payback period equals your CapEx divided by the sum of your labor savings, your scrap and rework savings, and your changeover savings.
Okay, let's run the math on that based on the real-world example they give in the guide. If a premium CNC machine eliminates the need for manual measurement and tool swapping, that saves a conservative 20 to 30 specialized labor hours per month.
Which is huge.
And its precision tooling prevents, say, 3 ruined bus bars a week. That saves thousands in the scrap copper. So that denominator in the equation gets very large very quickly.
It does.
Meaning that massive upfront CapEx can theoretically be recouped in a matter of months, not years.
Exactly. It's just the entire financial perspective. And the guide anchors this logic in institutional standards. It specifically references the U.S. National Institute of Standards and Technology.
Okay, NIST.
Right. Their life cycle costing manual, which is known as NIST Handbook 135, is basically the definitive methodology for evaluating capital equipment over its full service life.
So it's the gold standard.
It really is. Applying that NIST 135 framework totally transforms how an enterprise views procurement. It stops being this huge capital drain that negatively impacts the current quarter, and it becomes a highly predictable efficiency investment.
Right.
You're effectively front-loading cash to buy future labor hours and guaranteed material yield.
So knowing that this rigorous, basically government-standardized TCO math exists, the final piece of the puzzle here is implementation. How does a buyer protect themselves when they actually go to market?
Yeah, that's the real test.
When they draft a request for a quote, an RFQ, to a global manufacturer, how do they ensure they are getting a machine that meets these standards rather than just some lowball sticker price designed purely to win the bid?
Well, they do it by engineering all the ambiguity out of their request. The PayaPress RFQ checklist insists that buyers must be exhaustively precise in their operational demands.
So no vague requests.
Exactly. A generic request for just a busbar processing machine will yield wildly inaccurate quotes. A proper RFQ must state the exact alloys being processed, the maximum required dimensions, the specific tooling dies required on day one, and the necessary spare parts inventory.
And looking at this checklist from the guide, evaluating the physical machine is honestly only half the battle. You are actually auditing the manufacturer's internal software systems and their supply chain.
That's a critical point.
The guide explicitly mandates specifying CAD/CAM part library integration and offline programming requirements. Because if you ignore the software side, your engineering team might design this beautiful, complex distribution panel in SolidWorks, only to discover the brand new machine literally can't ingest those digital blueprints.
Which instantly creates a massive bottleneck. Because without that digital integration, an operator literally has to stand at the machine console and manually input coordinates for every single bend.
Oh, man.
It entirely defeats the purpose of buying an automated CNC platform in the first place.
Totally.
But with proper offline programming, the engineer pushes the code directly to the machine's controller while it is simultaneously running a completely different job. The downtime for programming basically drops to zero.
Furthermore, the RFQ checklist demands clear service level agreements, or SLAs, for maintenance. I mean, if a hydraulic valve fails 6 months into a massive production run, all those hardware specs we talked about, they don't matter anymore.
Not one bit.
If the manufacturer guarantees a 24-hour turnaround with localized spare parts, you survive the outage. But if that cheaper competitor leaves you waiting 3 weeks for some proprietary valve to clear international customs,
you're in trouble.
Yeah. The halted production will cost you thousands of dollars a day. Mm-hmm. So a cheap machine with an unverified SLA is literally a ticking time bomb.
Transparency and operational continuity are the ultimate goals of this RFQ process. A quote that lacks defined SLAs or explicit Incoterms or exact angular tolerances like that, plus or minus 0.5 degrees we discussed it, is fundamentally an incomplete financial picture.
Right.
And in that scenario, the buyer is assuming all the unstated risk.
The guide even pushes into macroeconomics, which blew my mind a little. It advises buyers to rigidly define target lead times and evaluate foreign exchange risks.
Yeah, FX risk is huge in global procurement.
If you secure a contract in euros for a complex machine with a 6-month build cycle, and then the currency markets fluctuate heavily against the dollar during that window, your actual CapEx could spike unpredictably before the machine even ships.
Exactly.
It really highlights that navigating industrial procurement requires you to synthesize engineering tolerances, logistical supply chains, and global economic trends all simultaneously.
Ultimately, any professional evaluating a major capital purchase has to ask themselves, are you simply buying a static piece of hardware, or are you investing in a guaranteed production outcome?
Right.
The pay-a-press methodology proves that pricing must be deeply practical and inextricably linked to real-world production metrics. Whether your facility requires a localized manual tool or an interconnected CNC processing hub, the equipment must align perfectly with the current workload, the required quality thresholds, and the strategic trajectory of the business.
So, to synthesize this entire framework for you, what the pay-a-press guide demonstrates is that the true cost of industrial infrastructure is dictated by long-term durability, microscopic precision, and labor utilization.
Absolutely.
The number on the initial invoice is almost completely irrelevant in isolation. A heavily discounted machine that damages copper and sits idle waiting for international spare parts is an existential threat to your profit margins.
It really is.
But a premium machine that executes flawlessly, integrates with your digital workflow, and runs continuously, that is the definition of true value.
Because high-accuracy equipment structurally eliminates material waste, it compresses handling time,
yeah,
and it yields mathematically consistent results. In heavy manufacturing, predictability is profitability.
And that wraps up our analysis for today. But before you step back into your own workflow, I want to leave you with a concept to consider. We just spent this entire deep dive analyzing heavy industrial equipment, the physics of copper springback, and the rigorous life cycle mathematics of NIST Handbook 135. But if this strict total cost of ownership approach is the undeniable blueprint for profitable manufacturing, how would applying that exact same TCO formula alter how you evaluate your own everyday investments?
Oh, that's a great question.
Right. If you ran the life cycle map on the car you drive, the hardware in your office, or those recurring, quote-unquote, cheap software subscriptions that just bleed a little bit of capital every single month, what are the hidden logistical nightmares sitting on your own balance sheet? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. And remember, always interrogate the sticker price of everything around you.